KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, presenting jazz drummer Michaela McCraven on October 19th at UC San Diego. Tickets at artpower.ucsd.edu.
It's time for KPBS Midday Edition. On today's show, the government shutdown, local impact, and military reaction. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. We'll talk about the deep impacts of the shutdown here in San Diego and across California. Meanwhile, active duty troops are now working without pay. How they're receiving that news, along with yesterday's meeting with top brass. That's ahead on Midday Edition. The government is shut down after Senate Republicans and Democrats failed to reach an agreement on government funding. Now, around 750,000 federal workers are expected to be furloughed. Many offices will be shuttered. In the San Diego region, tens of thousands of federal workers will be furloughed or forced to work without pay. And that's according to figures from Democrats on the House Budget Committee. Congressman Mike Levin joins me now to discuss the impact of the shutdown here in San Diego County. He represents the 49th District, which includes parts of San Diego's North County and South Orange County. Congressman, welcome.
Thank you, Jade. Good to be with you.
Nice to have you. So how is the government shutdown affecting San Diego families?
Well, I know how a government shutdown is supposed to work, and then I know what the director of the budget office, Russ Vogt, is saying he is planning to do. And those two things are very different. Let me take just a second and explain. Normally, you would have the federal government declare some workers essential and some non-essential. The essential workers would be asked to work without pay, and the non-essential would be furloughed. In any event, all those workers would be paid as soon as the government reopens. That's fundamentally different from what OMB Director Russ Vogt is threatening to do. He wants a wide-scale reduction in force, a firing of thousands and thousands of federal workers. And in effect, he wants to use this shutdown to carry out the Project 2025 agenda of which he was a key architect. In my view, Jade, what he is threatening to do is illegal and unconstitutional. There's already a lawsuit that's been filed in district court by federal workers to try to preemptively stop this from happening. And my understanding is that Vogt, in a private meeting with House Republicans, just said that he intends to start massive firing in just a few days. We're going to do everything we can to fight that, to prevent that from happening. But it's the latest example of this administration really going way over the line when it comes to the law and when it comes to the Constitution. And it's got to be stopped in the courts. We're going to do everything we can to fight in Congress as well.
Two questions for you here. One is, if that should happen, if mass firings happen, how do you anticipate that will impact San Diegans?
Well, look, it'll impact the entire country, and San Diego will be not exempt from it. You know, I think that it's fairly clear what Vogt wants to do is carry out the president's agenda, and even if that means violate the law and violate the Constitution. So things like defense, other top priorities of this administration, I imagine, would be spared. But other agencies or roles that are not considered favorable to the administration would be eliminated. And at the end of the day, this is all completely not the right or responsibility of the executive branch. Congress approves the funds, authorizes the programs, and ultimately makes decisions about federal programs. And what we will absolutely see is, I think, a court enjoin such a move by Vogt. I think we will see those employees rehired. and back pay provided, all, of course, at taxpayer expense. Mm-hmm. More chaos from the administration.
Well, Congressman, I mean, could San Diego be uniquely impacted if there should be mass firings, given that we have such a large population of federal workers?
Well, potentially, Jade, but again, I think it comes down to the priorities of this administration to the extent that a lot of those workers are defense related. At least the rhetoric from the administration is that those would be, folks that would be less likely to be fired. But we're going to keep a very close eye on it, because what we know from 9 months of this second chaotic Trump administration, the rhetoric doesn't often meet the reality on the ground.
Now, what does the fight look like? You mentioned the Democrats are going to fight these firings. What does that look like?
Well, let's take a step back and talk about what this is really all about, which is the fact that millions of Americans are at risk of losing their health care, of being priced out of the health insurance market, if we can't come to a bipartisan agreement around extending a policy that reduces Affordable Care Act premiums. There was an independent analysis just yesterday by the Kaiser Family Foundation that said that if no action is taken, the average premium would go from roughly $900 a year today to over $1,900 a year next year. That's a 114% increase. For one example, a family, a 60-year-old couple making $85,000 a year, they would have to pay an extra $22,600 for their health care next year. It's simply unacceptable. And what you'll see as a result, the estimate is roughly 660,000 Californians on Covered California will be priced out of the market. They will not sign up again for health insurance, 5 million nationwide. And all we are asking is let's step in on a bipartisan basis and prevent that from happening. There are Republicans in the House who've introduced legislation, along with many of us on the Democratic side, that want to work together. But this speaker, Mike Johnson, appears to do whatever the administration, whatever the president wants, rather than a lot of times what his own members want, Jade. So we're stuck. We're stuck right now. And we've got to get back to some bipartisan common ground.
Yeah. Congressman, you know, of course, we know and understand why this shutdown is happening. But what I'm asking is how would you intend to fight for folks who may be caught up in mass firings as a result of this shutdown?
Well, it'll be fought in the courts, for one. And I know that a district court lawsuit was just filed yesterday in anticipation of what might happen, what Russ Vogt might intend to do. I can tell you that I'm already on probably around 15 amicus briefs of different cases being adjudicated through the federal courts, and this would certainly be 16. You know, I would absolutely try to assist with an amicus brief in any way possible. But again, it's litigation, it's communication, it's mobilization. We don't have the majority, obviously, right now in the Congress, but we do have other tools in the toolkit, and I will do everything I can to fight for these federal workers. These are workers that do everything from process our Social Security and veterans benefits to keep our air and water clean, to make sure that we have food safety. I mean, you name it. And to demonize, to villainize the federal workforce writ large, as this administration is doing in this reckless, illegal, unconstitutional way, is just beyond the pale.
You mentioned the tax credits, and under the Inflation Reduction Act, those health insurance credits were set to end at the end of 2025. Why was that date initially set within that act?
Well, because we were using budget reconciliation for the Inflation Reduction Act, we were only able to have the tax credits extend to that budget window, to the end of the following fiscal year, and then on into the end of the calendar year. And so originally it was 2021 that the credits were put in place as part of the American Rescue Plan, then extended as part of the Inflation Reduction Act. But so long as we're using budget reconciliation, we're bound by those rules. What I would like to see instead is a bipartisan vote to extend those credits permanently or at least longer term. The cost associated with doing so pales in comparison to millions of people falling off the healthcare system, which increases premiums and out-of-pocket expenses for everyone, not just those on the Affordable Care Act, Jade, but if you have health insurance at all, if it's employer-sponsored health insurance, if it's private health insurance, all will be impacted. And just the same, because of what the Republicans did with their reconciliation bill this past summer, just a few months ago, it's not just the ACA, it's not just Medicaid, it's Medicare as well. They added $3 trillion to the debt, meaning there'll be a mandatory $500 billion cut to Medicare. So everyone's health care will be made worse because of what the Republicans did this past summer. We are fighting about the ACA right now. We are advocating to extend the credit for the ACA right now because people are receiving notices now. Mm-hmm. In October, they will receive a notice of how much higher their premiums will go in 2026. And again, what we are hearing is an average of 114%, Jade. That is simply unacceptable.
As this fight continues and the shutdown continues, as we speak, five local organizations are holding a press conference about how they will help military members whose paychecks will be delayed during this shutdown. One of those organizations is Feeding San Diego, but couldn't their funding also be impacted by the shutdown? I mean, how could that impact their ability to serve those families?
Well, let me first say, Jade, that I strongly support the Pay Our Troops Act, which says that even in the event of a shutdown, we need to make sure that our active duty military are taken care of and are paid for the service that they are providing this nation. I'd like to see a floor vote on that legislation. That being said, you're absolutely right that organizations like Feeding San Diego are going to be hard hit. In the event of a shutdown or even in the event of this budget, and the Republican bill from this past summer, which decimates SNAP and food assistance that will really hurt millions of Americans who are right on the edge. You know, everybody in Washington is talking a good game about lowering prices, but what the Republicans have done will actually increase health care costs. What they've done on tariffs increases grocery costs and food costs. So, you know, for all the promises made during the campaign, all I see for the average San Diegan are higher prices as a result of the policies of this administration.
I mean, how would you respond to those who say that this, who are really just frustrated with this shutdown, and who may be pointing the finger at Democrats?
I share their frustration, Jade. And look, I am here in Washington, D.C., and have been this week, ready to negotiate in good faith. I'm on the Appropriations Committee. I'm even on the Conference Committee, as selected by the ranking member of the Appropriations Committee, to negotiate on a bipartisan basis, to find those areas of common ground and to reach agreement on spending. But the reality is that Republicans aren't even here. The Speaker of the House decided to keep his members home. And I have no idea why that would be. I think that's a huge dereliction of duty. I think it's completely the wrong move. And look, we're not going to agree on everything, Democrats and Republicans. But on Monday, when the president finally had the congressional leaders into his office, what we heard, the readout that we got, is that the president, without the cameras rolling, was mostly in listening mode. He wasn't in deal-making mode. He wasn't offering much substance. He was in listening mode. And then our leader, Hakeem Jeffries, came and briefed us on that discussion with even a bit of optimism about maybe the discussion around the ACA tax credits had actually broken through. It was only a few hours later that the president then launched the first of these mean-spirited, childish, incredibly disturbing social media posts denigrating Hakeem Jeffries and Leader Schumer, making it all but impossible for us to have any kind of good faith negotiation at the 11th hour on Tuesday. Now, of course, even if the Senate had come to an agreement at the 11th hour, that would have required then the House to consider whatever they agreed to, and Johnson didn't even have his people here. So the whole thing was just entirely unserious on the part of both the President of the United States and the Speaker of the House, neither of whom are exhibiting any leadership whatsoever in this moment.
And what do you say to those who are going to be impacted and really don't want to hear about who's to blame, but instead want a resolution to this shutdown?
I'm with you 1,000%. I want a resolution just as badly, and we absolutely have to find bipartisan common ground in this country. We are not a dictatorship. This is not an authoritarian state. The budget director doesn't get to unilaterally fire thousands of people just because those jobs do not support the specific agenda of that president. That's not how it works in the United States of America. We are a co-equal branch of government. Article 1 of the Constitution says, again, it is Congress that authorizes the programs and appropriates the funds. And Republicans in Congress should stand up for their oath and for the equal power of the House of Representatives against a reckless, out-of-control administration that is hell-bent on more than doubling health care premiums for those on the Affordable Care Act. Health care for millions of Americans, Jade, is worth the fight.
I've been speaking with Congressman Mike Levin. He represents the 49th District, which includes parts of San Diego's North County and South Orange County. Congressman, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Jade.
The Midday Edition team has also invited Representative Daryl Issa of the 48th District on the show today. He was not available for an interview, but we are expecting a statement from him after today's show. You'll be able to find that on our website at kpbs.org. We also have an open invite for Daryl Issa to join our show for a future interview. Coming up next, the broader picture of how this shutdown will impact California. KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life, with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. We just heard from local Congressman Mike Levin on his reaction to the government shutdown. Well, now we want to look a bit closer at what the shutdown means for California. Joining me now is Adam Ashton. He is deputy editor with Cal Matters. Adam, welcome to Midday Edition.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. In a recent story, Cal Matters looked into all the different ways a government shutdown will impact the lives of Californians, from healthcare to national parks. So I want to start with Social Security and healthcare. I mean, what do we need to know about how those may be impacted?
Right. That's the most important thing. If you're depending on Social Security, you want to make sure that that money is coming. As with past shutdowns, the checks are supposed to keep flowing from Social Security, and there should not be an interruption in Medicare. The caveat is government workers are being furloughed. Many of them are being told they're not essential. So depending on how many federal workers are told to stay home in Social Security, you could wind up having customer service issues, and you might have a delay in getting a response. In those circumstances, the best advice is to call your congressman and try to get constituent assistance. But the groups who advocate for Social Security and Medicare are concerned that that customer service would decline if this drags out over weeks.
Well, how might California's wildfire and disaster response and even preparedness be impacted by the federal shutdown?
If there's an emergency, the federal government will respond. The firefighters will be there. FEMA will get there in an emergency. The thing that hurts is the long-term planning ends. The workers who are not doing immediate crises are being told to stay home. So that would hinder long-term plans between California and the federal government for disaster preparation. Could hold up money like grants coming down the line for those services.
Yeah. Well, what about potential impacts to travel? We hear a lot about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in this shutdown, the big question is how federal workers are feeling after all of the cuts they had earlier this year. So they've endured a lot this year. And now they're going to not be paid for some period of time. So in the immediate future, airports are open, Amtrak's open, TSA is operating, air traffic controllers are there. If this drags out, will some of them call in sick? Will they lose morale and take sick days? In that case, you might start to see delays. The travel industry is concerned about a shutdown because it does discourage people from traveling, and delays will occur the longer this goes on.
California has about 9 national parks. What do we know about the state of those during this shutdown?
There was new guidance that came out last night, and they're considered partially open. So during the 2013 shutdown, during the Obama administration, national parks were shut down. You couldn't go in. And that was what the administration felt was appropriate to protect the parks. When the government shut down during the Trump administration the first Trump administration, they left the gates open and there was not really staff. So maybe you remember there were lots of pictures of garbage piles mounting at different national parks like Joshua Tree and Yosemite, because people were going to the parks, but there was no one there to clean up and maintain the parks. This time, they're having like a partial shutdown. So some national parks employees are on staff. They're meant to keep the bathrooms open, prevent the garbage from piling up. But the visitor centers are closed down. And if so many people go that there's a safety risk, the National Park Service is expected to close down parks. But right now, they're partially open.
You know, it's like one thing impacts another thing. So if national parks are not able to sort of maintain those grounds, does that at all raise the risk then for wildfires?
Well, I mean, at this time of year, I'm in Sacramento. We've had some rain, so I feel good about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you are down there, but sure, yeah, if people are out there being boneheaded and not paying attention to the grounds, yeah, sure, that you could have a disaster, an accident happen that way. I can see that.
Yeah. Well, you know, how many Californians are at risk of not being paid during this shutdown? Just curious on that one.
Oh, dear. Yes. This is where it really hurts our local economies. There are 150,000 civilian federal employees in California. They won't be paid. Who knows how long? We also have about 160,000 military service members who will not be paid for the foreseeable future. I understand they were paid today, but they would not get paid October 15th. In your community, that's really serious. You have about 130,000 sailors and Marines who won't be getting paid if this drags out.
Yeah. I mean, Adam, do you have any sense of what that could mean for our local economies?
Well, I covered the 2013 shutdown in a military community in Washington State, and people spent less money. People were uncertain of what they could do. There was a lot of anxiety, even for civilian workers, if they were told to stay home and told they were not essential. That raised concerns for them about how long they would have their jobs. I mean, you wouldn't like to be told you're not essential at your work. So even if they kept their jobs, it kind of made a lingering morale problem. So for your community, yeah, I'm sure people won't be going out if they're not going to get paid to keep their household budgets in order.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned essential workers and non-essential workers. I mean, can you talk about how that designation is actually made?
Oh, my gosh. I was reading Military Times just to get ready for this interview, and these decisions come down at the last minute. You don't know. It could be last night, could be today, you're told whether you're essential or not essential. Each military installation is making decisions differently. In some places, childcare is open. In some cases, it might not be. So that's pretty difficult for families to navigate. Yes, you would not know if you're essential or not until your boss tells you that answer.
And
it's different for every agency.
Yeah, that uncertainty must be a source of stress for a lot of workers. Why is it unclear? Why is there not just a clear-cut answer to that?
I was thinking about that. I think in the Obama presidency, there was more telegraphing of what would shut down. And I think that reflects the Democratic worldview. Like, when the government shuts down, you're going to lose these things you like. And won't you be upset if the government shuts down? In a Republican administration, I think there's more of an emphasis on powering through and saying maybe we didn't need this many workers anyway. There's less telegraphing of what will close prior to the shutdown, at least in my observation watching these three shutdowns in the last dozen years here.
Do you have a sense of like which types of federal workers are deemed essential and which are not typically?
So again, emergency personnel, people with security jobs, they have everyone in the military, everyone in uniform is essential. They're working, they're just not being paid. Beyond that, it's how many people does Social Security have to have on staff to make sure the checks go out? How many people does the Navy hospital have to have on staff to be prepared for the people who have medical emergencies or medical appointments that can't be delayed? Those decisions come down pretty late in this process each time.
Earlier you mentioned that you've covered past shutdowns. What did you learn from those past shutdowns that maybe we should be keeping in mind today?
Yeah, I was really struck again from 2013 about how people felt about being told they were not essential and how that affected their view of their coworkers. It's just not pleasant to be told you're not essential. You think of yourselves as doing a good job and being critical to whatever your agency is, and then suddenly you're told to stay home while other people come in. That doesn't really affect taxpayers. I just thought that was really interesting, something that was unexpected. For taxpayers, I would be concerned about long-term damage to these agencies, especially after the tumult they've had this year with staffing cuts just across the board of the federal government.
Do you find that workers who are furloughed or not being paid, that they just sort of go find work somewhere else? Because who can afford not to draw a paycheck right now?
Sure, you could get temporary work in the time being. They will get paid in the end, right? When there's a deal, they will get back pay. They're made whole.
Yeah, eventually.
But if this goes on for 3, 4, or 5 weeks, then you have a hard time managing your house, I'm sure. So how long can you hold out is the question there. I don't know. I mean, government jobs, people are drawn to them for the stability usually. So, I mean, I don't think you'd be quick to leave if you thought you had a good thing. It would cause you to look at your coworkers differently and think about maybe thinking about a job change.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned it really kind of depends on how long a shutdown is. I'm also curious about, things like healthcare that may not be impacted in the near term. But how does the picture change if this is a lengthy shutdown?
On healthcare, there are some immediate impacts. We reported that tribes who rely on federal funding for healthcare could have an immediate impact in the availability of healthcare. More long term, I don't think you would see problems right away. There will be a diminishment of social services like food stamps or WIC. That could happen. Hasn't been said yet, but that might be something that happens soon. I think that the issue with Medicare and Medicaid will be more long-term. If people aren't going to work, that means that the long-term planning isn't happening. The contracts aren't being written. The grants aren't going to be administered. But I don't think it would come down to your ability to go to the hospital or get reimbursed through your insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier we kind of touched on how some organizations that typically provide assistance to people who are trying to sort of bridge that gap and make ends meet, like Feeding San Diego, for example. Already federal cuts had taken some money out of those programs. How do you see this shutdown being different from others, given that so many of the organizations are kind of struggling already with being able to provide assistance?
Yeah, again, that's what's different about this one is that the administration had made so many changes to distributing grants and cutting its workforce that this, I don't know, I'd say it could be more painful, but there might be more tumult this time because there's fewer people, or just the organizations were disrupted this year when DOGE came in. They've all gone through major changes, so it's going to feel different than the last two in that sense. We're not going back to normal. It's going to be a different feel after the end of this shutdown.
Well, something we'll certainly be watching and keeping an eye on. I've been speaking with Cal Matters Deputy Editor Adam Ashton. Adam, thank you so much for your insight today.
Thanks for inviting me. Have a good day.
You too. Coming up, we hear about a shift in policy for the U.S. military after yesterday's meeting with Hegseth and military leaders. KPBS is back after the break.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. All right. Yesterday, President Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth gathered hundreds of military leaders in Marine Corps Base Quantico, Virginia, in what is being described as a highly unusual meeting.
Well, today is another Liberation Day. The liberation of America's warriors in name, in deed, and in authorities. You kill people and break things for a living. You are not politically correct and don't necessarily belong always in polite society.
There, Hegseth also announced a series of new directives for troops in his effort to overhaul military culture from what he says is woke garbage to a warrior ethos, his words. I'm here live with KPBS military and veteran affairs reporter Andrew Dyer to talk about some of his big takeaways and what these policies could mean for San Diego. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Always glad to have you on. So before we get into the weeds of this meeting, I have to ask about the shutdown and its impact on the military here. What are you seeing or anticipating?
Well, these things are very, anxiety-inducing, right? So your last guest said folks got paid on the 1st, but that paycheck on the 15th is up in the air. So, it creates uncertainty and anxiety for these military families. A lot of them are either single income or they rely on that military income as their primary income. So with that not being certain, you don't know what's coming. So in the past, we've seen certain financial organizations like Navy Federal or USAA mm-hmm. kind of, you know, bend the rules a little bit and give people a little bit of time for certain bills. But I haven't seen anything specific to that so far with this shutdown. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine as the closer we get to that payday, and it not happening, we'll start to see a ratcheting up of those kind of efforts.
Yeah, well, hopefully that bending of the rules and really just grace is something that will grow in this time. You know, we touched on this earlier in the hour, but programs and organizations like Feeding San Diego have been hit by federal funding cuts already. And some of those provide assistance to military and federal workers in situations where the government shuts down and they're not getting paid. So will assistance programs be able to meet the need for help at this point in time, particularly for military families?
I think in San Diego, we have a very robust network of nonprofits and these service organizations that cater to veterans and military families because we have such a concentration of veterans and military here. So we're probably in a bit of a better position to weather this than maybe some locations that maybe just have the one base or they don't have such a robust support network. It's going to be taxing for these organizations as well. We're coming into the holidays where they usually get a lot of do a lot of their assistance work. So who knows how that affects things down the road, but I have a lot of confidence in the nonprofit network in San Diego. I talk to these folks. I've done stories with them. And, this is kind of what they're there for.
Wow. Well, back to this Trump and Hegseth military gathering. There was a lot of intense speculation leading up to it. Many people have described it as unprecedented. Are gatherings like this unusual?
Yes. You had basically, from what I've been told, every person with a star on their shoulder, every general, every admiral from across the globe was summoned to Virginia with their senior enlisted advisors to participate in this speech, this meeting. So you have, when I say that, we're talking about fleet commanders. You know, the Pacific Fleet Commander, the 7th Fleet Commander, Indo-Pacific, 5th Fleet, which is the Middle East. That is a, I don't know if you've kept up with the news, but the Middle East is a bit of a hot spot in the globe, in the world today. So you're pulling people away from their jobs and for the purpose of what we saw.
Right. Yeah. Oh, because I was going to ask about that. I mean, we're in a time where tensions are high around the globe. What does that say about, you know, the timing of this?
The timing, I'm not sure. I think that it really is revealing of the kind of the priorities of the administration, because Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, unlike prior SecDefs, you know, he is a political creature, right? Like, he is a Trump guy. You heard him on Fox News for years talk about the military and complain about aspects of the modern military. And what he's done at the Pentagon is really prioritize all of the grievances that Trump does, and he's applying them to the Pentagon. And so what you saw was the spectacle, and that's kind of what we've seen from the administration, is spectacle after spectacle.
Hmm. How did senior military officials respond?
Quietly. You know, they didn't really respond to the laugh lines and the applause. It was a little surreal watching Trump march out on stage with, you know, Hail to the Chief playing, and there was just crickets in the audience. And Trump himself even said, "Oh, I've never walked onto the stage with so little applause." And then he waited, and then, like, nobody, I mean, there was like really muted laughter. So, but that just speaks to the kind of the professionalism that these military leaders kind of, you know, hold themselves to. They're not political creatures, most of them.
Right.
And they're a little uncomfortable being put in these types of situations because there is this long tradition in the military of being apolitical. So being thrust into the political spotlight like Hegseth and Trump is demanding of them is a little uncomfortable.
Right. Well, some of what Hegseth said includes, we're training warriors. We're not defenders. Like, what's behind this kind of rhetoric?
I mean, this was, if you ever watched Hegseth on Fox and Friends or whenever he was on Fox, I mean, this is the same stuff he was saying on TV, you know, 5-6 years ago. It's a real kind of, I don't know, G.I. Joe understanding of the way the military functions, right? Where you just kind of see it as a bunch of jets and planes and boats and explosions, and anything that isn't a jet, plane, bloat, or explosion, you think is wasteful and maybe not necessary. And so, yeah, it's the same rhetoric he used to use on TV, and really just no room for any nuance.
You know, some of these new directives Hegseth announced include what he calls gender neutral or male level standards for physical fitness. Parse through some of that for us. I mean, what did you take away there?
So this was already the case in the military. Women didn't, there weren't a different set of standards for women as for men. You know, folks had to do push-ups and sit-ups. And I mean, that was back in my time. I think they have slightly different things today. But, you know, this is that political culture war being applied to the Pentagon. We've seen it since day one of the administration with their executive orders targeting trans people. Women have been, I mean, I think it's fair to say, have been targeted. You know, the former CNO, the leader of the Navy, was a woman. She was among the military leaders fired early in the Trump administration, as well as other, you know, people of color and women in leadership roles were, you know, drummed out of those roles and replaced. So this kind of, this all goes back to that blustery kind of language where you see the military as a bunch of burly dudes, and anything that doesn't fit that preconception is something to be written off.
Hmm. Hegseth also sort of lifted the guardrails on how the military handles allegations of abuse. He called it the no more walking on eggshells policy. First of all, how does the military handle these cases now, and what could be the consequences of those guardrails being taken away?
So it's a little unclear what he thinks this is going to accomplish, because all of the rules are not set by the Secretary of Defense. They're set by Congress. So the Uniform Code of Military Justice is the law that military services are adhered to. That is Congress. The JAGMAN, which is the Jug Advocate General's Manual, this is the basically the law book for military attorneys. You know, any changes to the JAGMAN, that is something that comes from the legislator. So all of these things, like complaints about misconduct and stuff, there is a prescribed process for how you deal with that. What he's done, and I took a look at the memo, is he is trying to tighten timelines and raise the bar for the level of evidence required to launch or prolong an investigation. So instead of an administrative investigation taking 6 months, he wants it maybe 3 months, right? So just kind of tightening the timelines there so that we're not like wasting time, I'm using air quotes there, and raising the evidentiary threshold. And in the memo, he talks a lot about false reports about, not specific, but the idea being that false reports are creating a burden to leadership, where they're focusing on all these investigations taking forever and they need to get rid of all that and move on.
Is that true?
No, not exactly. There's been a few changes in the last few years, I'd say since 2017 or so, where each year Congress has kind of chipped away at some of these processes in the military, basically around sexual assault, where the most recent changes were they took the chain of command, the commanders, out of the kind of the reporting pipeline of those investigations. They took them out of the hands of military commanders. The Judge Advocates General Corps set up a special kind of unit for sexual assault prosecutions. So, but again, this is something prescribed by Congress. This is not a, Secretary of Defense program. He is supposed to follow the law, which is kind of what we got into with the conversation I had with the lawyer yesterday, where just because the law says they can't do this and that, I think they've shown that they'll do what they want and, let the courts deal with it later.
Mm. Trump also got on stage and proposed that American cities be used as training grounds for the armed forces. Here's some of what he said.
Only in recent decades did politicians somehow come to believe that our job is to police the far reaches of Kenya and Somalia while America is under invasion from within. We're under invasion from within. No different than a foreign enemy, but more difficult in many ways because they don't wear uniforms. At least when they're wearing a uniform, you can take them out. These people don't have uniforms. But we are under invasion from within. We're stopping it very quickly. After spending trillions of dollars defending the borders of foreign countries, with your help, we're defending the borders of our country from now on.
Lots to question there and lots to unpack. You spoke with a former military judge yesterday. What did he say?
Well, so a federal judge ruled that Trump's deployment this summer of troops to L.A., of Marines specifically, was in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. This is a law that says that you cannot use the military to enforce the law inside the United States. Don King was the former staff judge advocate for the Navy Region Southwest Commander here in San Diego. He was in that job during the Eddie Gallagher court-martial. Mm-hmm. He then went on to become a judge and then retired and is now in private practice in San Diego. Now, he says that all of this puts troops in a really difficult position.
You're going to have, E1s, E2s, sergeants, staff sergeants on the ground if they're asked to take up arms against Americans who are probably going to wonder, is this really lawful? Am I really going to take part in this? And it could create an enormous amount of chaos.
You know, before that clip, you mentioned Eddie Gallagher. And when I hear the policy shift here, it almost seems like that is the type of troop member they would want.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I did a story years ago where I basically analyzed all of the Gallagher family's appearances on Fox and Friends, and how they used Fox News to essentially get Eddie, you know, to help get him off, right?
Yeah.
Because Trump became involved in that case. Pete Hegseth was a big proponent of Eddie's, not just Eddie Gallagher, other accused and charged alleged war criminals as well, who were later pardoned by Trump on his way out of office. But this is totally in line with Pete Hegseth's philosophy. This is among the policy changes that he talked about in that speech.
Well, briefly, as we wrap up here, what will you be following next when it comes to this story and the impact the government shutdown may have on our military community?
Well, in the near term, the shutdown is something that we're going to be watching coming up to that 15th and that first missed paycheck. That's where you really would start to see the pain. So definitely keeping an eye on that. In the more medium to long term, so far, these deployments are National Guard, which is a little bit different than just deploying the military into cities, right? There's a different legal thing happening there where you can deploy to the Guard in situations, which has been done several times in several states.
Though those members are not being paid right now either.
Right. Okay. Correct. Mm-hmm. If more active duty troops, I'm talking from, you know, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Space Force, outside of the Guard, are sent into cities, that's when we're going to see the next, I think, big fight in the courts.
All right. I've been speaking with Andrew Dyer, KPBS military and veteran affairs reporter. Andrew, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country, with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head-on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfiresafety.